This is Making Better Decisions. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan. Decisions are where rubber meets the road for organizations. Each week, we'll be learning from people who are on the front lines of turning raw data into better outcomes for their organizations. This show is sponsored by Canopy Analytic, helping companies make better decisions using data. Today on the podcast, we have our good friend, Jeremy Woods. He is an EVP at CBRE, real estate firm in Indianapolis. So what is one thing you wish more people knew about using data to make better decisions?
Yeah, I would say the one thing is, and this is probably something that most don't think about, but it just always, it never fails to, kind of excite me is, and it sounds maybe kind of silly, but I just get excited about, you know, taking the data, taking the information and then figuring out what it's telling me to do. Right. So in our business, there's a lot of lease comp information. You know, this deal was done at $5 a square foot. This deal was done at $4 a square foot. This was this type of building. This was that type of building. I just love to take and compile all the information, which is kind of like a bit of that's a challenge in and of itself. But then coming up with the metrics to see what all these data points are saying, you know, what are the trends? What are the rents in the Southwest side versus the Northwest side? So maybe it's the difficulty in compiling that information. So they never get to the joy of saying, oh, wow, that's what it says. But that's what I wish people would know is that, yeah, there's some really cool stuff on the other end of gathering the data.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I think one of the things that was most interesting to me about your experience with data is that it contains such a large component of primary research. There are a lot of folks within big and small companies, and their business kind of generates that data for them. That could be, you know, financial or supply chain or something else. And so they're really trying to dig in and look at the trends, but you actually get to be a part of the creation portion of that. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's true. It's an interesting point you make because I hadn't really thought about that, but yes, when you're in a big company, and actually I do think about it because even CBRE, hopefully, you know, the top brass isn't listening to this. I mean, I'm an independent contractor and a broker. They kind of call us the gunslingers out there in the field. But, they rely on some big data sets, some big systems that they never really had any direct act of participating in. So what I love about what we do is we're the ones out actually doing the transactions. We're the ones negotiating the lease rates, for example, which everyone wants to know after the fact, you know, what space leasing for in this market. So we're the ones creating that. And then most of the folks in my position, just kind of, that's what really lights their fire. That's their passion. Of course, that's what, when the rubber hits the road, that's how you make your living. I like to take it a step further and actually compile the information, create a platform to like a repository of information, which is what you helped me create in Power BI, so that I can, first off, so I can just set it in there, forget about it, know I can call on the information later in the form of metrics. What was 2023 like? What was 2022 like compared to 2024? So I like to do the deals, create the original research, as you refer to it, and then actually compile it. And then use my relationships with my peers, the other Jeremy Woodses at my competitive firms, that I can't do all the deals. I wish I could or did. But you have to rely on your peers to say, hey, I did deal with Acme Sprockets. You want to trade that comp for XYZ Corp that you did. And then boom, now we both have both deals that happen.
That's really interesting. So One of the other things that I think is really unique about some of the work that you've done is that it is also kind of reporting as marketing tool. I think, again, there are a lot of folks that most of the reports they build are either to inform an existing customer of the status of something or to help them make a decision or something internal. Your work has been really unique with data. I think you found a really cool new space to use. Can you tell me a little bit about how the stuff that you've built allows you to interact with prospects and new customers?
Sure. Yeah, so I guess I would go back to, and I'll try not to use too much like jargon or lingo, because the jargon and lingo is as unique to each market as like language is to, you know, to countries oftentimes. So what I think what I did early on was I looked at the market and I said, look, you know, Indianapolis, if you counted, well, let's start with the commercial real estate umbrella, right? So commercial real estate, sure, has different disciplines within it. So it includes office space, which you're hearing about a lot today. It includes retail. It includes multifamily, like apartments. It includes self-storage even. And then it includes industrial warehouses, which we heard a ton about during COVID. And so the first thing you need to do is determine, you can't, in a market like Indianapolis, you can't be a retail guy, an office guy, an industrial guy. Well, you could, but you wouldn't be very good at it, in my opinion. I wouldn't recommend you use that person. But so you really have to kind of specialize. So you have to pick one. So I picked the food group of industrial. And then what I did was just take it a step further, because you could be within the industrial umbrella, there's all kinds of different subsets within the industrial. It's, you know, you could be a manufacturing specialist. You could be a data center specialist, which is also in the news these days. You could be an office warehouse guy, which are kind of the smaller units. I chose the biggest. Why not? You know, just choose the biggest buildings that are the most impressive looking. And we call that type 4 modern bulk. And I live it. I literally have a car and my license plate says type 4. No one knows what it means. Even my friends who are in this business and specialize, they're like, what is type? What's that? Is that the type? I'm like, type 4. It's the space we lease. So like, oh, got it. So anyway, so I really think you need to immerse yourself into it. So when you take it down from commercial to industrial to a specific product type within industrial, now you can really build a platform to show clients and prospects, and whether it's a tenant looking for a space or an owner looking to find a tenant for their space or a developer looking to build the right building to fit the market. I use this CIR, as I call it, the competitive intelligence report, to market. That's all I use to market myself. That's it. I mean, and when you think about it, why would you want to hire me? You don't want to hire me for a bunch of flashy collateral. You want to know what the information is. If I'm going to build a building, how much am I going to lease it for? You know, what should I build?
Here I've been picking real estate agents based off of park benches.
Yeah. Well, those real estate agents, yeah, are on your shopping cart. It's like, well, at least he has enough money to advertise on a shopping cart. Maybe he's successful. Let's hire him.
Yeah.
You know, and so yeah, there's that. But the and then it's just these days, the lone wolf, you know, broker, kind of the solo practitioner. Yes, they exist, but when you're working at the higher levels of marketing buildings that are worth, you know, $100 million, you know, your clients really expect a team. And so we took it a step further, and we call her our data wrangler, Gwen, who you know. She doesn't know, or she knows real estate now, but she's just very good at basically wrangling all the data that all of our team throws at her. And we created the platform of the CIR to kind of display it. And then we send out the CIR every month. And I have for the past, boy, it's been a couple decades now, but it's really evolved with the marketplace. When we started, there wasn't Power BI. You know, it was a, Excel spreadsheet. It wasn't as early as Lotus Notes, but, and then, a PowerPoint, you know, so we've really evolved it, and you've helped us do that. So,
yeah, that's awesome. And I think there doesn't seem to be anything that would make me more confident in working with someone than like you sit down and they're like, here's all the information right in front of you, right? We're not going to make estimates. You can see all the, comparative information. You can see everything. Now, granted, right, I work in data. So in data, I trust.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's such a cool idea that you're showing this person, hey, here's tangible evidence that we know exactly what we're talking about. You can immediately build trust and also probably build a lot of interest, right? They're probably going to start wanting to ask you a ton of questions, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's because once you show them something, as you probably know, and you went through the process with me of building it, it's just like how you can dive deep, right? But it's interesting because when I try to break things down to the simplest, elements, right? Mm-hmm. And, that's what scientists did until they got to the quantum level and then they got scared and said, forget it. That's too small. wait a second. There's only a 36 chance that electron's going to be in that spot at this time. Okay, forget that. Let's stick to the bigger stuff. So you can go too small, right?
I think there's some of them hanging out underground in Geneva that are still trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah, right.
I get you.
Or maybe they have and they're all like manipulating us like we're like puppets on a string. But anyway, that's a whole...
This podcast is going to turn into Joe Rogan.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to say that's a whole nother podcast. But so break it down to the smaller level like we talked about, commercial, industrial, type 4 within Indianapolis.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But then... we got it laughing about that. I kind of forgot where I was going with this, but okay. So here, when you think about real estate, there's not a whole, I don't want to give it away like it's so easy, but it really kind of is easy, but it can get really, really difficult. Depending on how far you want to go down the rabbit hole, down to that quantum level. And we try to get to that quantum level and then stop. But when you think about it, so real estate, I could go into any market is my, claim to my personal fame. Not that I tell people this, but I tell it to myself. I could go to Phoenix. I could go to New York. I could go to any market, apply my system, and I'll become an expert in a much, much quicker time frame than it typically would be purported. To be an expert, like a lot of guys in our business, you got to do this for 5 years before you can pay your mortgage. That may be true, but I think that the system that we run, you could get up to speed much, much quicker and probably exceed some people who have been in that market for decades. Because if you have the platform and know how to populate it, and where I'm going with this is basically real estate's simple. Once I define I'm an industrial guy, I'm type 4, I have a bunch of criteria. The type 4 building has to be 28 foot clear or greater. It has to be 100,000 square feet or larger. It has to have this size truck courts. So then all you have to do is figure out what buildings within that market fit that criteria. Then you just plop those buildings into your database that you built. And then you just track what happens to it. Okay, that building exists, who's in it? What rent are they paying? When is their lease up?
And you can see what becomes
valuable. So, and it's really just, it's the box, defining what boxes you're going to track, who moves in and out of that box. And that's kind of it. But with those triggers, if you will, that creates a cascade of information, right? That you've learned terms like absorption and occupancy and effective occupancy. Like we've taken it to a level of just taking those simple events and then showing everything we can possibly think of to create a metric to try to figure out what's going on. Are these buildings leased because they have a certain number of this is dumb, but doctors, is there a ratio? Is there a magic, or is it just, you know, I don't know. Is the Southwest side better than the Northwest side? That sort of thing, right?
One of the things that you just touched on, I think, is universally applicable. So you were talking about how, you know, if you moved markets, right, it's not like overnight you're going to be, you know, Mr. Wizard. But I think that you talked about the speed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really one of the things that we see everywhere, not just with real estate anywhere,
mm-hmm.
is what using data in kind of a modern way means is not just filling up a gigantic database that's so large that no one can do anything with it, or running all of these advanced fancy machine learning models, which are cool and have awesome applications. We're seeing a lot of those cool applications mm-hmm. kind of in, you know, popular culture right now. But I have always found that doing simple well is the low-hanging fruit for most people. Mm-hmm. And when you're able to look at a large, complicated, interdependent system, our human brains weren't really designed to do an excellent job with that, mm-hmm. right? Like, if I just, like, plopped you on the street in downtown Indy with no computer, no nothing, it was like, hey, tell me everything, right? It'd take you a long time to get that figured out.
Yeah.
Whereas when we have that data and you're able to aggregate it and slice and dice and really dig in and interrogate it, that puts you in a position where you've translated the real world, which is messy and kooky, into like clean, structured information that your brain can digest mm-hmm. quickly. And so that gives you that speed advantage.
Yeah. And I agree with you up to the point of like, so here's a couple of points I want to make. I love these podcasts, and I love podcasts in general, because I've done so many interviews with, you know, newspaper people, reporters, and I'll spend sometimes literally like 45 minutes with them. And we will talk about all kinds of things. I'll read their article, and it makes me look like I have no idea what I'm talking about. They literally put everything in there. They missed everything, every point that I wanted to make. So I wanted to make that point real quick, that I love this because everybody can just listen for themselves in a long format and take what they want from it. So that's kind of a side point, but it's related to you dropping me in the middle of Indianapolis. Like, I could, if I had my phone, I could like Google things and say, okay, well, where's the industrial product? And I'd probably go to a system that's called CoStar, which is the biggest, that's almost like a monopoly, basically. It's CoStar compiles, you know, metrics and data. But mm-hmm. I always test these systems back when I was working for a developer and these groups come in, I said, okay, if you want me to buy your system, tell me every building that I own, like right now. You got your system, you got your laptop up, tell me every building that I own. And so they enter the, yeah, okay, this is such and such a company. Yeah, here you go. You own this much square footage. It's like, no, I don't. I own a lot more than that. And I own way more buildings than you say I do. So I can only assume, and I'm going to get back to that, the articles that I talked about and the reporters. I can only assume if the accuracy of the data that I know intimately is that wrong, that all of their data is equally inaccurate. Does that make sense?
Hmm.
So, yeah. So if they're off absolutely. On my portfolio by 45%, I can only assume that that's probably about their average, because the portfolio that it's right out there. They can, you know, they can gather that information. So I assume that they're only, you know, 45%, they're off by 45% across all of their stuff. And even the stuff I don't know about. And then where I'm going with the article and the reporter is I know my business cold, I would hope, like when it with respect to Indianapolis Modern Bulk, I spent an hour with them to give them to try to transfer that knowledge. They wrote an article that had nothing to do with anything that I said. So I can only assume that other things in the world that I don't know anything about that were written by someone else is perhaps equally as wrong. And where I'm going with that, Ryan, is our model in our industry is the, I love analogies, and the analogy is to transportation. So how our industry handles research is first they outsource it, okay? And it's like we were talking before, it's like it's as preposterous as outsourcing exercise. Like, Ryan, you do those curls for me and I'm gonna watch my biceps get huge. It's like, that doesn't work that way. You gotta do your own research. You gotta do your own exercise if you wanna get the benefits. And so the way our industry works is it's like a bus. It's like putting Lewis Hamilton, like the pro F1 driver, knows how to drive like no other, and saying, okay, Lewis, to get where you want to go, you got to get on this bus. Okay, I get to drive. No. You don't get to drive. We got a bus driver driving this thing. You just sit with everybody else in the back there in the bus in the seats, and you just shout out to the driver where you want to go. Like, that's the analogy for real estate metrics. So you got these huge companies like the bus, and then they want you to get on their bus and then tell them what's going on. Like, tell me what, Jeremy, that deal you did, tell me about that. And then they take my information and then they compile it. Maybe it's accurate, maybe it's not, because again, it's that third party. And then they disseminate it to everybody else for a price. So why would I do that? I want to build. So our model is, I'm an F1 racer. I'm going to build an F1 race car, purpose built for the track in Dubai or the track in Austin or whatever, right? So it's purpose built for the market. I'm driving it because I'm the only one who knows how to drive it. And I'm not going to pay anyone else and ride in a big lumbering bus and hope I get to where I want to go.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So that's absolutely. Well, I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding for you there. Like, I mean, using the CIR has been really successful for you, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe so. I mean, if you look at agency listing market share or what have you of our team, you know, we have we're definitely a dominant player in that arena. And it is primarily geared towards, you know, if you owned a big warehouse building and you wanted a tenant, that's really who it's geared for. Or if you were building one and you wanted to know what to build, where to build it, how much you're going to get, that sort of thing. That's really who it's geared for. But it also helps occupiers immensely, right? Because it has all the information of who, what all those other like kind occupiers are paying in the market.
So it sounds like you're kind of rocking and rolling. Like, what do you see as your biggest challenge? Like, what's the next hurdle with data?
Yeah, I guess the biggest challenge is just, you know, when people see data as just a commodity, like it's just as good to take that big bus with that group as it is to drive an F1 race car. I mean, to me, there's like no difference. There's no comparison. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I know what I want to do. And it's just, but it's hard to, you know, to escape the fact that people look at you as maybe like you're a commodity. Like you said, Ryan, I got my residential guy off the grocery cart at the grocery store. I don't know. I guess, maybe he's got enough money at least to advertise on a grocery cart. Maybe he's good at what he does. I don't know. So that's always been an issue. And I think going forward, it could be an issue. And probably with like AI and all of that, you know, could people see, hey, we don't need, you know, brokers anymore, right? Why? I don't need that. I get all this information from AI. But, you know, until an AI robot's doing all that I'm doing, showing space, telling them the differences of the market and so on and so forth, and then populating the data, they still need us, the ones doing the deals, the guys in the trenches, you know, that to provide that level of transparency to the marketplace. Because, you know, when you're leasing a million square foot building, there's a big difference between paying $5 a square foot and $462. That, you know, do the math, that's a lot of money over a long period of time. Yeah. So I want to work with the guys who can tell me you need to pay $462, not the $5 that someone's asking, you know?
Yeah. 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 100%. I mean, I obviously have never bought, well, maybe not obviously. I don't know, but I don't own any super large, you know, commercial real estate in Indianapolis or anywhere else. So my only experience was buying the house that I'm in right now.
Yeah.
And
very analogous.
Prior to, prior to that, I had kind of been like, I had just had like some experiences where like we're renting a place and someone opens the door and hands me some paperwork and I'm paying them a couple grand.
Right.
And I was like, okay, not quite sure what that was for. I probably could use that money. And it wasn't until I bought a house that I really understood like the meaningful value. I actually view what you do for work with what I do for work. So I'm a business intelligence and tech and data consultant. And a large part of what I'm doing is showing people what to expect and advising them on what other people are doing, how the system works, all of that. Mm-hmm. So we ended up having this phenomenal real estate agent. You just kind of don't know what you're getting yourself into. Like, I'm sure you've done it so many times that it's like you could, you know, go from discovery to closing, you know, with your eyes closed. But for, you know, just Joe Schmo, I'd never bought a house before. And so I think what you're really doing is you're being a trusted advisor mm-hmm. to that person where you can say, hey, this is how the system works. You know, they're going to squeeze you for $5,000 here. Don't worry about it. You'll get it back over here. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about that, I see how the reporting that you've built only furthers your ability to play that role of trusted advisor. Number one, because you get to build the trust, right? Like if I sat down with someone that had all that, I'd be like, whoa, you got your ducks in a row.
Yeah.
And then if I found out you did all the research yourself, I'd be like, holy cow, you know? But then also that advising part. So you get to kind of put this reporting that sits on top of your primary research in front of people and watch them go through that process. Mm-hmm. So that's a really cool picture into how people use data to make decisions. Like, mm-hmm. what have you learned from getting to watch that process so many times?
Yeah, I've learned, well, usually the common is wow, you know, this either just looks really good and it's flashy and there's just numbers on here and they could be totally wrong, but wow, it looks good. I'm going to work with you anyway. And let's face it, no database is perfect and no data is perfect, but there's definitely different levels. But mm-hmm. usually the comment is because you know, it is a relationship business, right? And that everybody has. And that's another challenge that you can bring up, right? It's like everybody has a brother-in-law or sister-in-law that's a realtor or whatever, but it's like, oh, are they good at what they do? Well, you know, sometimes I don't know if I'd mix family and real estate myself, but, you know, I guess where I'm going with this is the comment about the CIR is, why isn't anyone else doing something like this? And I've said this to you many times because it's really, really hard. It's you know, I said it was simple, but it's really hard once you get past that simplicity. Like it's hard to define a building. You know, how do you figure out what the clear height is? It's how do you figure out how big it was? You know, it takes time. And when you've been doing it for a long time, oftentimes you are the one that precipitated that building being built. So you know exactly how big it is because you've got all the plans for it. You know exactly what the rents are. And it's just, you said, you know, it's that you had a good realtor working with you on your home. And it's interesting because that's been in the news lately, right? A lot of your listeners might say, oh, great. I heard the National Association of Realtors got sued and now we're going to save a bunch of money on selling our house. It's like, okay, so Ryan, you own a house, right? And you're going to go sell it and you would have had to pay a 6% fee. I'm just making this up. Right. And that 6% mm-hmm. fee, half of it goes to your listing agent. Half of it would go to the agent of the buyer that's coming to buy your house. Right. All right. That's kind of mm-hmm. how it works. And, you know, my house is worth whatever it's worth, you know, $100,000 well, it's $500,000, and 6% of that is going to go to the agents that help me out. But how do you know your house is worth five? Maybe it's worth $600,000. You know, the market's changed. So I think people are so concerned about looking once they learn the market and, oh, my house is worth $600,000. Thanks, Ryan. Then they start to talk about your fee. It's like, wait a second. You were going to sell your house for $500 a minute ago. I told you it's worth six. My fee is only whatever, 20 grand. I'm making these numbers up. You just made, yeah. I just made you $80,000. So that's the part that gets really with humans. It's like they, once they learn some information, that's theirs. But they forget that they just learned that from you. And then now they just want to talk about the what's next, like the fees and the, you know what I mean? So that's definitely a challenge. Well,
yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, there's definitely human psychology behind that, which I'm dubiously qualified to talk about, but I do think that it definitely is interesting also being in the professional services industry around kind of like how you price things and how you talk about things changes a lot of the way that people think about paying for services. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? For example, if you know, somebody wants me to come in and build something, like do labor, mm-hmm. they're willing to pay for that pretty comfortably. They're just like, I get X, X is worth Y, I'm paying Z. Sounds like a good deal.
Yeah, they can see that value. They can see what you're doing.
That's right.
Hours equals dollars. Got it. Yeah.
On the other hand, there are a lot of engagements that we do where we're focused on data strategy, which a lot of people think is very different from business strategy, but it's really not. I don't think that data or tech or anything is like this separate business division. They're just tools that we should use to make our business help achieve its objectives. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'll come in and we'll talk to people about what their business strategy is and how data can help them achieve that. And kind of the same thing, right? Like we'll have a couple conversations and they're like, all right, thanks. You know, so it really is, there's this kind of interesting psychology around, you know, how do we sell information that is really interesting, right? It's an interesting side conversation to kind of data. Cause that's really what we're talking about, right? Is like when we take this information, we make it readily accessible to people, you know, how do we strike the right balance of making sure that that's like a sustainable thing that keeps generating value for people?
Yeah, you need to like with the CIR, like how, you know, it started off as like literally like a placemat where because we would always have lunch with clients and we made it, hey, let's just laminate our report. And it's literally a placemat that they can eat as we sit and talk and have lunch. There's my laminated CIR placemat. This was back when, you know, laminating machines were like the high tech thing. But you know, so it went from that 11 by 17 two-page thing to a one-page overview in Power BI with the evolution. But as you know, I've got designs, like I just give them the overview of the market. The deep dive stuff comes in pages 2, 3, 4, maybe 5, 6, 7 down the road. And so, but you have to have that level of commitment, you know, assigned client to get that deeper dive. Otherwise, you're just giving away, you know, all of your knowledge, which is really, in my business, that's really all you have. I mean, you sure they want to work with someone that they like, but, you know, once you get that out of the way, you know, that information is really, really valuable. It took a lot of time and effort to gather it. And the accuracy of it is going to lead to clients making significant amounts of money, huge returns. And if they use bad information, it can lead to equally disastrous results. Right. And so,
yeah,
so that's like, I don't even, like when we start talking about fees and stuff, like I don't get like commissions, of course, that at some point that has to come up, but that, that's, I get so excited just trying to share my knowledge and my experience with my clients, because I, oh, wow, they're listening to actually what I have to say. I know I've had a lot of success. That's what really gets me pumped up and excited. And then when you start talking about, I'm like, ah, and then you start talking about fees and it's like you ruin the whole moment, you know? It's like, wait a second. I was about, we were on track to give you a 28% return on your investment. And then now we're talking about this, you know, because that's what people can, they get that. Wait a second. I gotta pay out this much money, you know? So yeah, we're going off on a tangent there, but I totally get it. How do you quantify your value, you know, and to the extent that you can do a better job than the next person about quantifying that and demonstrating that, I think, you know, is going to lead to great success. And the CIR is just one of the things that we use as an overview, kind of get in the door. Hey, you want more? Well, let's take it to the next level of commitment, right? For the deep dive stuff.
Yeah. So as you're talking a lot more about, you know, those interactions where kind of the rubber meets the road of folks kind of looking at your reporting and then making decisions around, you know, should I build, should I not build, where should I build, should I buy, all of that stuff. Over time, you've become an expert, not just in your market, but in the data and in how to aggregate it. So you've kind of distilled, you know, your niche into this, you know, 1 to 2 pages of information. How do you watch people digest that? Like, how are they handling that? I mean, presumably some of these people are pretty smart, you know, they're large scale investors and developers. How are you seeing smart people interact with this stuff and make decisions?
Yeah, I guess it's important to understand where real estate, we talked about how I picked my specialty and the umbrella of commercial real estate, but within the industrial sector, when you look at a company that has a distribution center, they're looking at what's their overall logistics spend. And it doesn't matter what company it is, right? Like pharmaceutical companies, everybody has to, and we all know this now because of COVID, everybody has to deal with supply chain issues. We all know about those now. Like they always were there. We just, particularly in the United States, we just did such a good job of you know, you can walk into CVS and pick up your favorite whatever bottle of Aleve tab. You don't care where it came from. You never thought about it. I know it's on that shelf. Yeah. I'm going to go pick it up and I'm going to pay for it. But only when it's not on that shelf do you say, what the heck is going on?
And things have been pretty good for us here for a pretty long time. Right. Yeah.
So you get, now we know why, what happens. Well, you know, when the shipping container doesn't show up at Long Beach and it doesn't get on the train to go to Chicago and it doesn't go dray down from Chicago to Indy to the distribution center, and it doesn't go from the distribution center to the store shelf, that's why it's not on the shelf. Like if one thing happens within that chain, it just disrupts everything. So I say that because real estate itself is only about 5% of that whole logistics picture. So as much as I love real estate, I kind of was bummed out when I heard that. I'm like, oh, you know, man, I'm only 5% of the pie. But, you know, transportation is by far the largest, 50, 55, even more percent for a lot of companies. So transporting it from A to B. When teleportation's invented, there you go. Forget it. I have to retire.
Time to retire. Yeah.
So once the transportation model is solved and they say, ooh, based on our transportation, Indy is the best spot because that's where we'll minimize the outbound transportation and the inbound transportation. Then they worry about their labor. Like, who's going to work in my distribution center? That's probably 20% of it. Then they're worried about their inventory. Are there taxes on the inventory based on, you know, the municipality, based on where I send it, that sort of thing. So then it works all the way down to literally the bot is real estate. Now, it's still very expensive, right? Like I said, that million square foot facility at $5 a square foot, you know, that's a lot of money annually, and you're signing a long-term lease. So it matters. But I say all this because there's so much that got them to that point to where they're looking at my CIR data. And then they're like, maybe they're relieved because they're like, whoa, at least this is transparent. This is clear. Jeremy's shown me exactly what these spaces should lease for, what the owner will give me as an occupier to improve my space and build it out, how long a term I should sign. So it's kind of, I would hope it's kind of a relief and a refreshing thing, because they've just gone down this road to, you know, the final stop is, where do I put this distribution center? At least Jeremy has this covered. So I think they maybe, I would hope, would be relieved. At least knowing that they are not, they have the peace of mind knowing that they're getting a market deal or better on their real estate. Just like you with your house, right? There's so much that you're thinking about, you know, the movers, the, oh, we're moving away from family and, you know, I got this new job. And yeah, but of course, at some point you're concerned with how much you're paying for your house. And if your agent is just awesome and they get it and they empathize, hey, I just moved myself. I forgot what a pain it was. But I'm going to tell you, Ryan, at least you know that you're getting a good deal on this house. That to me is worth, I mean, it's hard to quantify that, but.
Yeah, it really is. You know, you, especially in, you know, there are a lot of fields, mine being one of them, where there's this concept of information asymmetry. So I know what I'm talking about a lot. Mm. You may be surface level, if anything, and you have the money and have to make the decisions, right? You know, the typical example of this is like, you know, like the car mechanic or, you know, something like that. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I you know, enjoy taking stuff apart and tinkering with it, you know, as much as the next guy. But when it comes to a transmission rebuild, I'm really at the mercy of this person telling me that I need to do this or don't need to do this. And so there's like a lot of fear, right? Like, am I going to get taken advantage of? Is this going to be the right deal? And I really think the real estate market is one of those, right? Like you talked about, you are really, you're not just a broker of locations, you're a broker of information.
Yeah.
And so helping to clear up that information asymmetry is just going to like turn the trust into a lock. At least, like you said, like at least in your Jeremy's small portion of the world, there's at least like clarity and trust.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, that's exactly right. And yeah, and that's always the challenge. And it's funny because whenever someone's calling me to sell their services, I just geek out. I think to myself, what if this person only knew this about me and my industry? They would crush it. They would be able to focus in, like, when such and such becomes receives a certain title at this company, that actually triggers all kinds of things for that person. Like, they no longer are an employee. Now they're an independent contractor. Like, if people knew that, they would be able to say, ooh, that I'm going to specifically work for this. You know, I know that that's the triggering event. These are the things that they're going to be thinking about. I'm just going to call them and just talk about those things, because that's all that they're thinking about, right? I don't know if that makes sense. So,
the power of information. Yeah, so that's exactly right.
We have to figure out where like your asymmetry is. You know a lot about what you do, but where does that overlap with meeting Jeremy where he is right now? Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, in my business, we try to do something actually very similar to what you do. And you see, I think a lot of experts that are, you know, whether it's in my space or any space, my experience is that the successful ones try to give as much of that information transparently mm-hmm. as makes financial sense.
Yeah.
So for example, right, you'll see me or lots of other people going out and doing a lot of kind of content creation marketing. Mm. So going out and talking about, hey, what's the latest and greatest? Hey, what's, you know, old reliable that still works? What's the balance between the two? How should you think about X, Y, or Z? Like, hey, you're new to this. You're making a decision. Here's kind of a, you know, five easy steps to get from where you're at to making a decision that will be good for you. Like, what are the important things? What's the 20% that gets you 80% of the way? All that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think you've kind of just tapped into building that trust across the asymmetry. You've just done it in like a really cool and data empowered way.
Yeah, it's kind of the book. I can't remember who wrote it. The Speed of Trust. You know, so like if the trust factor, like there's a huge gap. If you just call me cold, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you do. I don't know what you're selling. All I know is I want to get you off the phone or out of my face. Yeah, but if you, hey, Jeremy, you know, I'm so-and-so. I'm your such-and-such's brother-in-law's friend. Oh, okay. So you have a little bit of trust there. So you bought yourself a little bit. You've eaten into that gap of trust. And then you show them like a CIR and you're like, then that's like, whoa, then maybe that closes that gap of trust, maybe all the way or partially the way. And just, that's what we use the information for, is to close, you know, they don't know you. They've never used your service before. So you have to close that gap of trust immediately. Whereas if I called my dad and I said, Dad, you're looking for a distribution center, can I represent you? That would stink if he said no. I mean, come on, Dad, you're my dad, right?
Hey, well, what's your rate, Jeremy?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, come on, man.
I think so-and-so at such and such a company does a better job. But so, you know, how do you, that's what I think about all the time. How do I, maybe not my dad, maybe, you know, dad might be a bad example. Someone you really trust, how do I build platforms and systems and approaches that close that gap in trust from someone I just met? I can immediately close that gap with data, information, etc. That's kind of the trick, right? And it doesn't matter if you're in real estate or pharmaceutical sales, or everybody's selling something, you know.
That's right. So that's right. That's full circle, man.
Right?
I love it.
Yeah.
Jeremy, I think one of the things that's most important when we're talking to anybody is, you know, sure, we're talking about, you know, work and data and how they connect with one another, but learning about people and kind of how they got there is really interesting. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about, you know, some of your formation and how you ended up, you know, in real estate in your very specific niche.
Yeah, I might be an oddity because I know exactly how I got into this business, and I trace it back to the Renaissance Center in downtown Detroit, which I don't know if any listeners are from the Detroit area, you know, gone through some tougher times, but I'm a Motor City kid. So I was born and raised in the suburbs of Detroit mom worked for Ford, dad worked for GM. You didn't ask where your parents work. You just look in the driveway and see what car they're driving, you know? So that was kind of my, my upbringing. So I had a friend who, had an uncle who had a business that their business was, they would remodel office interiors. So I found myself at 2 a.m. in downtown Detroit, which is not always a great idea, but we were, doing a job. My job was, they give me a sledgehammer and I knock out all of the old walls that are within a suite within an office building. And it was a great job for a young teenager that just wanted to take out some aggression. And I just asked one time one of the carpenters, I was like, how did we get here? Like, he's like, what do you mean how we get here? You know, we came down the Jeffries Highway. It's like, no, how did we end up in this space doing this office remodel for this company? It was Merrill Lynch. He's like, oh, let me tell you, there's guys that they're called brokers and they come through representing companies. They show them the space, they negotiate leases, and then they get paid a commission based on the value of that lease. And they get it paid all up front. They don't even have to, you know, fulfill their whole lease term. I said, well, that sounds way better than knocking down walls with a sledgehammer. So I figured out, where could I become a broker? And I looked at, I love Big Ten football. So my criteria was they had to have real estate and Big Ten football. So it was either Ohio State or Wisconsin. So I went from Michigan, which is not a place that likes Ohio State. And I defected. I went from Michigan to Ohio State, never went to Wisconsin to visit, and studied real estate. And one of my instructors when I was a junior said, you should go check out this company, Pizzuti, in Columbus, Ohio. So I did. And that was it. Yeah. And then I went from Pizzuti to what is now Prologis. And then I went from Prologis to become a broker at various firms. And now I'm with CBRE. So that was I was always real estate. I was always commercial real estate. I know that's an oddity, but that was my story.
That's a super cool story. I love it. The sledgehammer story is a good one. So I also, when you were at Ohio State, you got a bachelor's in real estate and urban analysis.
I did.
As a data junkie and someone who spent way too many hours playing SimCity as a child, urban analysis sounds pretty cool. Yeah.
I wish it were that easy. So, yeah, SimCity.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, being the grand computer master in the sky does help with building a city.
Yep.
So, what are some of the things that you like to do outside of work for fun?
Yeah, so the latest thing that I've done is I bought a garage condominium, which is just about 5 minutes from my house, and it's
real estate guy buys real estate.
Yeah, I didn't fall too far. So my wife always said I was happiest in the garage, like tinkering, she calls it, and literally mopping my floor. I don't mind telling people I just love to mop my garage floor. And so I decided, hey, let's go buy a bigger garage. So I bought this garage condominium and just completely decked it out. And it's a community of folks. It's about 120 units and, you know, peep some pack Ferraris into them. Some work their business out of them. Mine's just, I think they did a write up. It's like Superman had his whatever place of solace. This is, you know, kind of one of our favorites. And I was like, I don't know about the Superman part, but I definitely find sanctuary there. I love taking things again from the very beginning and just, building upon it, upon a theme. And so I created a theme that kind of matched my personality. And it's kind of like a Chicago loft meets a 50s kind of diner type of thing. And you can watch F1 races there, Super Bowl parties. It's got a court where my daughter can play basketball, stuff like that. So
that is so cool.
It's a retreat. And once my wife figured out that I couldn't live there, she settled down quite a bit. Like, it's not zoned. It's not zoned. So don't worry, I'm not moving out. It's just a place to go and hang out with like-minded people.
Yeah.
So.
I love it. Jeremy, where can people connect with you?
Yeah, they can call me at the office. They can reach out via email. I don't know if you have a, system where you can shoot them my email or if I need to.
Yeah, we can put some links and everything in the show notes.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. jeremy.woods@cbre.com. And,
couldn't miss you.
Yeah. Love to talk about, obviously, real estate. Love to talk about our platform and what we've done. How it's might be applicable really to any type of a business.
Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You got it. It's been fun. I appreciate you inviting me.
Absolutely. Thanks to the audience. If you learned something today or laughed, please tell someone about the podcast. Thank you again, Jeremy. This has been another exciting episode of Making Better Decisions. See you next time. That's a wrap for today's episode of Making Better Decisions. For show notes and more, visit makingbetterdecisions.live. A special thank you to our sponsor, Canopy Analytic. Canopy Analytic is a boutique consultancy focused on business intelligence and data engineering. They help companies make better decisions using data. For more information, visit canopyanalytic.com. There's a better way. Let's find it together and make better decisions. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week. Peace.